You are listening to iRadio TT, online all the time.
Welcome to Music Matters, the Caribbean edition. The podcast series featuring news, interviews and analysis of all the music from the islands.
Hello everybody, welcome to Music Matters,
the Caribbean edition. I'm Laura Dowridge Phillips.
I'm Nigel Campbell, and here we are once again talking about music in the Caribbean.
From the beautiful, sunny, and at times rainy Caribbean, because we are in the rainy season, Nigel.
It's rainy season right now, rainfall
rainy
up to this
season.
Morning.
Mosquitoes got it all.
Birds eat it all from Mango Cemetery, and they would say what. That is what it is.
But interestingly, as even though, you know, we are experiencing inclement weather, we've also been experiencing a lot of events, Nigel.
Live music
plenty is alive in Trinidad and Tobago.
I could speak convincingly on that, because I did something this year that I've never done. Well, for those who know and those who don't know, I actually put on an event called Jazz Artists on the Greens, plug.
Yes, and it was the first time I attended.
In 16 years, eh? We'll talk about that. But
we need to assess this friendship.
But that said, well, it's an outdoor event, right? Of course, we have it in dry season. We had it a couple of months ago in March. But I decided this year to attempt to go to all the known outdoor jazz events, right?
And of which we have a lot.
And yeah, we had a lot this year. We had 5 organized ones, including Tobago, which is like the kind of big one, Tobago Jazz Experience.
Can I refer to your Facebook post?
Go ahead.
Well, jazz in the pool, jazz in the garden, jazz in the...
jazz all over the place. And they still have one, they have one or two more jazz events.
Is it a jazz event if you don't use the word jazz?
Well, listen, all joke aside, there was this one event called Music in the Meadows. I haven't heard of Green Meadows in Santa Cruz. And
see,
I laughed.
Got smart. They didn't use jazz.
They didn't use jazz. And they just, but they say where it was, right? But that said, This year I attempted to check out all the events, of course, you know, to monitor, to make sure what the competition is like, but more importantly, to kind of get a proper gauge on what the live music scene is in Trinidad and Tobago, so for a lot of instrumentalists and things, because I'm in contact with a number of them. And so after our event, which is in March, I went to Cipriani College, I went to Santa Cruz, went to Tobago, I even went to Blanchard's, it's one that's just 2 years old, the North Coast Jazz, right? And I was able to gauge all of these events. You know, like, they have a nice ambiance. An older demographic, certainly if it's named jazz, as opposed to younger shows, like, they had 2 massive reggae shows in Port of Spain. And of course, when you have soakers, there's a younger demographic. But that said, how we engage with music, and as well as we have a lot of music indoors. Kaito Blues, famously, Vonette Bigford had a nice show at Little Carib Theatre. Just last weekend, I went to an event at up in Cascadia Hotel with Ralph Davies, 90 years old. Kind of, they call him the father of jazz in Trinidad and Tobago. It was a tribute that for him. And everybody was there. It was in a place called Club Fusion. This was rammed out. And as I said, it was well attended. And we have this kind of idea that the live music scene in Trinidad and Tobago certainly is happening. I mean, for the month of June, I've gone to about 8 or 9 events.
You've been busy. You've been out and about.
Well, when you have no life, but I'll edit that out. As I said, I'm kind of keen on kind of tracking all the music that's happening, live music that's happening and thing, because I say this in the context that part and parcel of the larger music industry thing that's happening here is that Music TT, the state enterprise, is also creating a thing called the Live Music District. Let's just hear what Trade Minister Paula Gopi-Schoon said last year in October when she launched the Live Music District as part of the Music Strat Plan.
Trinidad and Tobago's first live music district begins in the city of Port of Spain and will create the performance spaces and revenue influx needed for a robust and sustainable music industry. From Aria Peter Avenue to the Queen's Park Savannah, there are a large number of existing bustling venues that are primed for live music. And each of these venues can potentially become a part of the Live Music District, the pilot of which is due to launch on March 1st, 2018. Deliberately scheduled after the carnival season, which already boasts of a high number of live performances, the district will seek to create a vibrant live music scene for the rest of the year. A partnership has been created with the Trinidad Hotels, Restaurants and Tourism Association in order to gain the buy-in of the spaces and to coordinate the venue assessments. To date, site visits have been conducted at over 25 restaurants, lounges, and hotels in the city, and these will continue in the weeks to come.
Right, Live Music District has been engaging artists to perform at restaurants and clubs to kind of build a kind of body of venues that yes. have live music.
The pilot period should be winding down now.
I think it's going to probably by the end of this month. Yes. It'll be finished. So, and they had a very narrow area, so just basically Port-au-Spain on the kind of avenue stretch.
Yes.
And they've engaged a number of venues, they've engaged a number of singers, and they also put on their own events. They had a couple with Pan, they had one with jazz, with gospel, so with the Ministry of Culture, with the Port-au-Spain Corporation, they have these events that they also put on.
Officially welcome you to Music TT's first ever live on the avenue, and this is under the Live Music District.
And they have been, you know, focused on creating this with the pilot project, I guess, to see the feasibility mm-hmm. of whether live music is kind of like the main draw.
Yes.
And food and drink is there, as opposed to all my restaurant food and drink.
Exactly.
Foods, and music in
which
the background,
which is what we heard mm-hmm. that is how the Live Music District has been functioning, because yeah. I've spoken to a couple of people, performers who mm-hmm. you know, lamented that the spaces weren't really made for live music.
Which is surprising, because I think part and parcel of the project was that they visited some of these venues, they made recommendations in terms of what the venues had to reconfigure,
yeah,
to make it kind of a more conducive to live music space and thing. And I don't think it has happened fully.
No,
As I said, I've been to a couple of these events in Kaiso Blues and one other place called Experience, and these are, well, Kaiso Blues is live music first, right? Mm-hmm. He has a song system, everything, instruments. But what is happening is a lot of these young singers, and they're relatively young singers, singing pop or covers or whatever it is, they're doing karaoke effectively.
Yes.
So they're singing the tracks on a yes. computer or whatever it is. And the idea of a live music, which is a band or a live musician performing and a singer singing along, or even instrumentalist yeah. exclusively, hasn't seemed to grab hold.
No, because some of these venues don't cater for that type of music.
And the other thing is, and this is a kind of, I don't know if it's a flaw or if it's an oversight, an unintended consequence. The state via Music TT was going to put up the first 20 minutes of the yes. performance in terms of a payment, right?
Yes.
Kind of setting a rate. And it was up to the artist to negotiate any additional time after yeah. that, right? And a number of venues.
But that has been in contention, eh? Because artists have complained that venues just want to pay.
Mm.
They're just taking up the 20 minutes, which is
yeah.
what Music TT is
yeah.
paying.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond that,
they're not getting
booked for anything beyond 20 minutes. And when they complained to Music TT, they were told, well, you as the artist have to negotiate
mm-hmm.
that on your own. Where I think the expectation was that so maybe some of the artists thought Music TT would have been the one to negotiate
as I said, part and parcel of this music industry thing is that musicians, singers, we've kind of identified a simple fact that they're not really the best business persons. So they look for other persons to be their managers and yeah. booking agents and that kind of thing. So they either have to be trained in how to negotiate a proper fee. I don't know what they were doing before Music TT came around and offered yeah. the first 20 minutes. Because clearly somebody was paying them, so they knew what to do.
But also, Niger, it speaks to a kind of innate selfishness and greed, I think, on behalf of a lot of business people.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that you are not willing to dip into your own pocket
yeah.
to pay a singer, how serious are you really in developing local talent?
But consider something. You have a space that's open from like 5 o'clock until midnight, seven yeah. hours, and all you have is 20 minutes of live music.
Yeah, you're not really
serious.
You're not
serious, right?
So if Music TT was not paying you mm-hmm. for those 20 minutes, would anybody have been hired?
And this is the big question I ask, because I don't necessarily think they would have hired them.
No, because they weren't doing it before.
I spoke to a venue operator, won't call the name, but I spoke to a venue operator, and they told me that how they wanted, they said, well, we wanted an hour. So they hired three singers at 20 minutes each.
You see?
And they got an hour of music, right?
So they get any talent.
Yeah. But they want to pay
for entertainment, but they don't want to pay for it. And I think that is a real issue. Mm-hmm. Whereas we have venues that do live music mm-hmm. all the time that have not been included in the Live Music District.
Well, that had been, let me watch my words properly. Kaiso Blues is kind of known in Port-au-Spain
yes.
as the live music space, right?
Yes.
Taken over from Mascam, which burned down, unfortunately. There's another live music space, which is Fiesta Plaza,
yes.
Right? Fiesta Plaza initially was kind of overlooked, right? I don't know why. I think they may have been geographically out of the kind of project, pilot project region, but it's a matter of a block. So I don't know
exactly
why that was a problem. And they actually
But they selected their establishment in Fiesta Plaza that are part of Live Music
Correct.
District, whereas
yes.
Fiesta Plaza itself is not part of it.
Yes.
And they are custom doing live music.
Every
they
weekend.
Have the setup, they have the stage,
they have
the
stage
system.
Twice a week, every week for 52 weeks a year. So, well, of course, speaking to the principals at Fiesta Plaza, you recognize there's a kind of bumping of heads and a kind of statement like, well, these people don't know what they're doing, and if they're not taking me seriously, I'm not going to be part of this whole thing. As you did say, there were a couple of venues, a couple of restaurants in the Movie Town Fiesta Plaza area that have hired musicians. One was hired and one was fired, and they brought back some. And it's a kind of back and forth kind of situation there. But ultimately, what I think has happened is that...
Is Live Music District functional the way it is now? What we think it should really...
Well, understand something. The
Live Music State...
Based on what Sound Diplomacy...
That is the English company that was hired by the government to do the music strategic plan for Trinidad and Tobago. And it has...
Been doing this thing called Music Cities, right? Mm-hmm. And they have a kind of template of how these things, the artists have you supported. But it really is about live music, building audiences.
Right.
Right? What these people have been doing is a kind of cheap way. They get some people to come on board, some bars and restaurants to come on board. They throw some singers, some young singers, who can sing. They're kind of talented. A couple of them have gotten some repeat business and that kind of stuff. But you only want them to sing for 20 minutes.
Right, and then the kind of music that they want as well. We have such a diverse... Array of music. So somebody told me singers.
Yeah, I don't think rock bands can walk.
No. Or reggae singers.
No reggae singers again walk.
Or opera singers.
So and you're quite right. And even I could tell you for a fact no jazz musicians can walk.
Right.
No instrumentalists again.
So then it's not really working.
It's not working. It's clearly not working, and I don't think the success is there because when the state comes in and says they're gonna fund the whole project, well then we kinda in dire straits. Right? Because you're not getting the buy-in by the stakeholder, which in this case would be the restaurant and bar. In terms of what I've been seeing and what I've been to, and as I said, I've been to a number of these events, small indoor, outdoor, jazz, even one reggae event. And I'm not seeing the kind of mapping that could and should be happening to make a kind of case that, okay, the Live Music District is going to be something that's happening that we could market, because we could say we have a Live Music District, but I think part and parcel of what the state's role is and what the state's goal is to put that as a stamp on the tourism marketing to say that, okay, when you come to the Caribbean, Port of Spain is a must do because we have the Live Music District of the Caribbean. It may by de facto be that case because, well, Puerto Rico at one point was a very hot and happening place. The hurricane last year has basically decimated Puerto Rico. Some of the other small islands that I've been to, their live music scene is, of course, concentrated in a couple hotel districts, and it's not very active, certainly not in a city center.
You know what surprised me? When I went to Jamaica for Carnival, there was a discussion about that happening on television, actually.
Uh-huh.
There was a guy complaining, lamenting the fact that there's no more live music happening in Kingston, which really shocked me. Because you think music, Jamaica equals music.
Yeah,
and Jamaica is such a huge tourism country that you would have thought, I could just pick up myself and go anywhere and hear live music outside of the hotel.
Yeah.
And the hotel I was staying at, the only live music I heard was a girl singing, you know, some songs during dinner. So she was just pipe music.
Did she have a live band behind her?
No.
So she was singing her tracks.
She was just singing. And people having dinner and already taken out.
That's what I mean.
So that is probably the extent of the live music. And this guy was trying to revive live music. He has an establishment, I can't remember the name of it, where he would bring in bands and stuff to play.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a serious, serious issue now in Jamaica. And that is where, you know, you have people like Yardcore, who is the one who started the whole reggae revival with Chronics and Protégé and the whole pack of them, where he would do these live reggae events.
Protect Yardcore. Rastafari, protect each and everyone inside here tonight. So,
And that is how people were able to unearth all this new reggae talent coming out.
Yeah.
So it's happening. But it's not a coordinated state effort like what we see happening in Trinidad. Mm-hmm. And I spoke to the legendary
Dean
saxophonist
Fraser.
Dean Fraser when he came to Trinidad for the Redemption concert, because he's the man running you know, behind Taurus Riley.
Taurus Riley and thing, yeah.
And so I spoke to him about that. So
tell me what we talked to him about.
Well, I'd ask him about the state of music in Jamaica and the live music in particular, because I know for musicians, it is having being able to play in public spaces and earn money is a big thing. How do you feel about the music industry in Jamaica?
The music industry is a very serious industry.
Right.
And I think it's better than years ago. Mm-hmm. And it's getting better.
Yeah.
And so I think that these youngsters are very serious now about, you know, what they do, and they use social media to the highest level and all of that. Yeah. So, you know, of course, you know, we are getting there.
I was in Jamaica for Carnival, and I was listening to a discussion on television about the lack of live music.
Yes.
In Jamaica, which surprised me, because I thought that Jamaica would have been one of those places where you could hear live music all the time. Because we're now having that discussion in Trinidad.
Unfortunately, '80s, '70s, '80s, early '90s, that was the easiest thing to find in Jamaica.
Right.
Live music used to be on a Red Hills Road strip where you had 5-6 bands playing live in clubs and all of that. All of that now is the past, you know.
Why is that?
Economics, basically, you know. Because, you know, when the economy not doing so well, the first people who are ejected is musicians and all of that. So economics and places to play live. So, I mean, we have to big up the young musicians again. You know, a lot of them try to do little things here and there.
So like Yardcore.
Yes, you understand me. But we really, the venues and all that isn't there anymore. It isn't really happening.
But do you think it's really essential for all those musicians and artists to get a platform and earn some money? Because traveling is usually...
I do think so, and I mean, I hope that we really get it together and, you know, have somewhere that musicians can go and play live and express themselves, because, you know, we have the musicians, and I'm sure they are raring to go, but they just that output, that the place for the music to happen is just not there, and I know it all have to do with economics, you know, people not spending their money to promote. I mean, you don't even have, you used to have maybe about 5 or 6 big concerts in Jamaica yearly.
Yeah.
It's down now to about 3.
Yeah.
It's like 50%. You know?
And that's so surprising, because when people come to Jamaica, you come in thinking, I'm in the land of music.
Right.
And it's such a heavy tourism country.
Yep.
And it would be nice to pick up yourself and go somewhere and hear the music.
Yes, and the international body says Kingston is the land of live music and things, but it's just not happening there. And I also think that government should help to provide that platform.
They should. Nice. So... So you heard what Dean had to say.
Yeah, yeah. And interesting.
So, yeah, and I mean, he talks about the government need to do something. But so, you know, I've been thinking in the context of Trinidad and Tobago, what exactly should be the role of the state where developing a live music district is concerned? Because, Nigel, we've seen in Trinidad, we are in a unique position. Once Carnival is finished, that's the space between Carnival and Carnival.
Yes.
Because, you know, we have that little, as the Merrick calls it, the center season.
Yeah, yeah.
That center season.
Which could be 8 months long.
Right. But then we're about to enter Carnival again, because band launches are starting
soon,
at the beginning, at the end of this month, actually.
First of July.
6th of July, we have the first band launch.
Which band is that?
A new band called Endless.
Oh, Lord.
So we are about to enter the carnival season again. The cycle is about to begin again for us in Trinidad. So that space, those 3-4 months between carnivals is ready. There's 3-4 months.
Yeah.
You find that is when everybody tries to get their voices heard. So mm-hmm. you have a lot of theater productions mm-hmm. on. Mm-hmm. You have a lot of music events on, music jazz events. Yeah. So that's why the calendar seems to be so full at this time of year. Because yeah. everybody needs to establish their voices and get the shows done before the Soca Mayhem takes over.
Yeah.
So it's happening organically. Mm-hmm. We have the live music happening organically. We have the events happening. People doing their own marketing. People mm-hmm. getting their own gigs. They're hiring their own performers. Mm. It's happening organically.
And it has been happening for many, many years. Right. It doesn't start yesterday.
Go ahead. What should therefore be the role of the state? Because we're talking about the live music district. This thing with the state paying the venues for the 20 minutes really yeah. don't make any sense. It's not really in fostering a sense on the behalf of business places that this is something they should be supported.
Well, regardless. We understand something. The state's ideal function is what they call creating an enabling environment. And right. that means, you know, laws are passed, you remove bottlenecks in terms of bureaucracy and create incentives for a private sector to thrive and flourish and so that all the stakeholders ultimately make thing. Now, when you pay on behalf of the act of the venue, you pay the artist. Basically, you're bribing the venue, and the venue, I personally think the venues have outsmarted the state in this particular one by saying, okay, you'll pay for 20 minutes. That's all we want.
Yeah.
There was no onus that, okay, we'll pay the 20 minutes if you pay the additional 20 minutes as negotiated by you and the artist. So that to me was an error in terms of implementation of that thing. As I said, the state has this role of creating this enabling environment, right? I know that in the past, they've utilized tax incentives. Famously, I think it was 150% of your taxable income if you invest in art and creative and music investments and that kind of stuff. Some years ago, the Chamber of Commerce had done a kind of they checked out certainly among their members, mm-hmm. and it really didn't catch on, right? I mean, we've had reports from IDB and all kind of people that said that in terms of creating an industry that is outside of oil and gas, that's the whole rule, the whole idea of diversifying the industry of our economy,
yeah.
focus on a number of other industries, manufacturing, tourism, and music and entertainment was one for since the 90s they've been pushing this thing. So at least it's about 20 years now we've been talking about diversifying the economy along the music industry lines. We've attempted, of course, via a number of state enterprises, which I have always argued is the wrong business model.
Yeah.
Don't try and get into the business of doing business, of doing the music business. But that said, we've been trying to do this thing in terms of exporting artists. So
yeah.
we pay for artists, for labels to come down here to find the artists. We do what I call the Rihanna model. We bring a foreigner here, they pick an ingenue, and yes. they put them in the States, and boom, the artist.
And we have a lot of that still happening.
Well, it happens, and if it works, it works. It works famously for Rihanna, yeah. right? I mean, she wasn't the greatest singer going in. But certainly she really wasn't. No, but she really...
But an excellent marketing machine behind her.
She's the biggest artist now. Yeah. I mean, she's huge, right? Let's not fool ourselves about yeah. that, right? But and their government, the Barbados, they have a kind of investment company that invested money after Rihanna was successful, and a guy called Hal Linton, he was their trophy boy, and they were touting him as the next big thing. Was not as successful.
Yeah.
But in our situation here in Trinidad, as I said, we've attempted those things, bringing artists down. We've paid for, of course, for people to go to South by Southwest, Womex. We've had Womex, South by Southwest. These music fairs, music conferences. We get what we get, and it's, of course, in the big world of music, if you get one bite, that's plenty, and I guess you have yeah. to celebrate it and thing. But in our little context, I've always argued, and I've always challenged that what the government should do is try to build its indigenous music industry. Yeah. And from a burgeoning, self-sustaining indigenous music industry, something will rise to the top that will take us global.
Yeah.
Right? If your only role is to basically, you will do the cherry picking, and you'll come in and you'll pick this one and that one. It may not necessarily be the best model, because for the last 20 years, I've been attempting to do that via the state enterprise model.
Yeah.
And it really hasn't paid off or anything. In the context of the music industry, certainly in the context of the live music industry, I think one of the things that has been kind of repeated, and I think you and I kind of noted it earlier before we started this conversation, is the idea of data.
Yeah.
And capturing information. And as I said, I've been to all these events, and I haven't really seen... Music TT doesn't have a large staff, so I haven't seen many persons. I recognize who the persons are from Music TT, and I'm not seeing them in these events. In the events that I went to, not saying that they did not go to events. But certainly as part of a larger exercise, I run an event, and nobody has ever asked me to provide figures.
Yeah.
Right? So I'm not sure that the mapping of the live music industry is happening.
We have a unique trait in this region where we do things without data.
So as I said,
data-less policies.
Yeah, I have seen draft policies for TTN. I've actually seen the draft policy for the music industry in Trinidad and Tobago, the current one, which was hidden from me, but, you know, my eyes saw it. And one of the things that became apparent in all these documents is that the persons who write these strategic plans all say the same thing. There's no data. But so therefore, we'll have to extrapolate data. We'll have to estimate and based on a similar model state. And then you recognize that sound like pure Achifi.
Yeah.
Right?
So that's where we should actually start, though. Before we start implementing all these initiatives, we should start by collecting data. Because how are you then making policy? How are you then coming up with these ideas?
Data collection exercises, I am assuming, based on our concept, well, our current thing with this property tax, where everybody has to go wrong. It seems like an expensive undertaking. Now, property tax is every house and every piece of property in Trinidad and Tobago. For the music industry, it basically, we have numbers. The claim is thousands of persons in the music industry. And this was an estimate, as I said, I've been doing since 2006. Yeah. Estimate.
But how hard would it be to get that data?
Exactly.
I mean, everybody more or less has to register with CUT and those kind of things.
Well,
so.
As you rightly say, membership organizations like the CMOs, they have names of persons, right? There are a couple of organizations that are being formed for promoters and others and things. But this idea of a kind of overarching state, collating all this data and using data to make a properly functioning music industry, and the segments of it, the recording, the broadcasting, the live, that doesn't seem to be on the front burner, as they say, right? Now, as we know, in the current iteration of Music TT, with the cherry pick strat plan, they have an artist development program, they have a showcase, they have the live music district, and they have an online platform which is going to be allowed for registering. At present, there's a company called Music. I think it's an Australian company that have created the online platform that is linked with the Live Music District.
Right.
It's music.com/Live Music District. It's already online. And that is basically, it has a calendar. And you could go to that calendar and see, okay, this artist is performing there and so on, so on, so. But when you have a calendar, like the month of June, I remember looking at the calendar was empty. Now, I don't know who's supposed to update this information, if it's Music TT or the artists themselves. But if I'm looking at a calendar, I'm only seeing 4 dates in a 30-day month.
That's a problem.
It doesn't look like things are happening, right? Now, as I said, we're in the pilot phase project of Live Music District. But as you rightly said, before Carnival, they had 1,000,001 fets for soca, right? I'm hoping they mapped all these events. I really can't say with certainty, but I know that there's a private organization that's been tracking, and certainly CUT has been tracking as many.
And the thing is, it's not difficult because there are private entities that do FET calendars.
Yes. Right.
And they have every single FET documented.
Yeah,
so the information is not hard to find.
Post-Carnival, Ash Wednesday, we kind of, in an agency, run to this jazz festival season.
Right.
Because we know that, as you rightly said, at the end of July, Carnival starts all over again.
Yeah, jazz festival and reggae festival season.
One time.
This year has been a big year, I mean, a segue for reggae shows. Because, you know, normally we'll have like Reggae on the Bay. Redemption is a regular show. Normally you have Redemption, you'll have Reggae on the Bay in a couple months. But, you know, we've had two major reggae
events,
shows. And the kind of crowd.
What's the numbers you see on those events?
Listen, I can't even begin to estimate. Redemption was sold out.
And where was that?
At the Queen's Park Savannah. It probably had, I don't know, it probably had like 20,000 people. I don't know.
Wow.
It was a big show. It was sold out.
And the other one was?
The other one was Magnum Inferno.
That's what,
It wasn't as big as Redemption, but it had a good crowd.
And as we're talking about large events, because admittedly, jazz events, as I said, don't necessarily have those kind of numbers, right?
Yeah.
But they're constant and they have similar older demographic, but a big event that we've always had on our calendar is Soca Monarch.
Yes.
Right? Soca Monarch has gone through some changes, certainly in the last couple of years, in terms of... In terms of superstars, you know, pulling back out of the event.
That is a show we need to have all by itself. Do we need Soca Monarch? Because...
Well, I remember William Monroe many years ago said that Soca Monarch was a kind of magnet for... And it was a reason why people came to Trinidad. And they may have some validity to that. Certainly when they had Super Blue in his prime as being
not
effectively...
Anymore. That reason don't stand anymore.
Well, I mean, I think certainly... I remember 2011 being there and... At that, I could have sworn it was the biggest audience I'd ever seen at the stadium.
Yeah.
People were spilling over the top and that kind of stuff. You told me it may not have been the biggest. But ultimately, at that year, I remember famously...
Kind of like 70,000 people or something like that.
Well.
Yeah.
I wrote an essay and I remember thinking that William Monroe, because his model seemingly also involved bringing stars in the black entertainment industry from in the Americas, in America. And he had this linkage of having these people coming and adding color commentary.
Yes, I had a very hot Idris Elba.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But at that particular one in 2011, he had effectively the biggest soca stars we had.
Yeah.
On the industry at that time. Everyone who was big, Iwa, Marshall, Bungie, Fayan, Destra, Kess, Sherwin Winchester, they were all there, right?
Yes.
And they all had hits that particular carnival and thing, right? And I was just thinking that if this man is smart, and he kind of suggested that he could take this as a rolling caravan.
Yes, which is what you should have done.
That, right?
Exactly.
Because that would have been effectively, you could have taken that all over the world.
Yeah.
If that is a Soca Monarch, boom, all over the world. Of course, they structure a lot of these kind of events with some of them, like, if it's not a fete, it's a competition.
Yeah.
It's not a concert. The same way that Redemption was a concert or Jazz Artists and the Greens was a concert.
Except for Masha Monday and Tuesday the Rocks.
Yes, those are now concerts, right?
Yeah.
Although the aesthetic from the stage, if I'm in the audience, they still talk to me like I'm in a fete.
Yeah.
Right? But that's how...
That's how we perform.
That's how we perform, yeah. Right? But that said, the idea and the grand idea of us having these large events, and of course small events going all the way down to Kaiso Blues events, which is basically 100 persons, mm-hmm. I think, and collating them and making a statement and saying, okay, this is now part and parcel of how we consider Trinidad and Tobago.
Yes.
Right? Now, some years ago, InvestTT, which is the investment arm of the Ministry of Trade, they had a magazine. And in the magazine, there was this article about the entertainment industry, because they were pushing it since the 1990s. And they kind of made a statement that Port of Spain is a must-do for any traveler coming to the Caribbean.
Yeah.
Right? Because at the time, they thought... And they were also offering some alternatives. We should bring a Dave and Buster's to put it here.
Yeah.
There's always this idea that if we bring some foreign thing that... Americans, let's say, no, and they come to Port of Spain, okay, well, they recognize some of the brands, fast food brands. You know, we have every North American fast food brand. At least, okay, they'll say, well, there's a place to go. As opposed to bigging up the indigenous industry, right?
Yes.
As I said, we're a genre focused, unlike Jamaica, which is either reggae and dancehall, which is effectively the same thing. We have soca, we have reggae, we have gospel,
we have jazz, we have rock,
we have everything. And they're almost like self-contained. So there's a rock audience.
Yes.
And there's some venues that are notoriously popular for rock.
Yes.
And they have a rock fan base. Yes. And they also have their little ecosystem for rock and things.
Same thing with gospel.
Gospel in a big way. They have three radio stations. And they're huge.
And when they do their shows, it's
second to soca is gospel.
Yeah,
right? Let's not forget. They have a thing called Open House, which is free.
Yes.
The stage big like a Rolling Stone stage.
Yeah, gospel is a big industry.
Huge. Tobago is the biggest thing in Tobago.
Yeah.
Right? And so we have all these different genres that kind of separate us, but at the same time make us unique, certainly in the Caribbean. And as much as, well, we've seen what they've been selling in terms of tourism, we sell hotels and seminars in Trinidad and beach and relaxation and weddings in Tobago.
Mm-hmm.
But the bigger issue is that we're not able to catalog what really is happening here in our industry.
And that maybe should be really the role of the state.
Should be. I mean, they
should be able to say, this is what is happening in Trinidad at any given time of the year. These are the amount of events we have. Recognizing that, okay, outside of Carnival, this is we have the center season. These are all the events that you can find.
Mm-hmm.
Push that as a tourism product. They don't necessarily have to get into the nitty-gritty of paying people and negotiating venues. That they don't need to do
As I said, I think ultimately our music industry has been in existence for over 100 years. We've been recording music here since 1914 or something. So, and artists, 1912, Caribbean people went abroad and recorded before jazz was even recorded. And we've had local entrepreneurs doing music business, Sagooms, Christopher, Robert Amar.
That's why I keep saying it happening. Mm-hmm. It happens organically. Because yeah. now we have these, the younger ones definitely.
Yes.
Not waiting.
At all.
On
at
anybody
all.
To do anything for oh, them. They're not waiting on the stage. And as we, they as, are going ahead.
As we have seen, we've seen some young artists now actually making some headway on their own yes. independently.
Well, we have our own Nyla Blackman. Nyla Blackman. Up for the Viewer's Choice International mm-hmm. Best International Artist Award.
Christian Kalpi is now effectively a fixture
yes.
at Sony.
And
right?
we have our very mm-hmm. own first class producer mm. doing
first class.
Amazing first work. Class. He's now working with Sean Paul. Uh-huh. He's producing one of his producers. He did a song with Sean Paul and David Guetta. He have a mm. lot of work coming up in the pipe internationally. Mm-hmm. So there are things that are happening without any kind of state interference or support.
Yeah, the state intervention, as I said, should be kind of almost subliminal. They should work on behalf of the stakeholders. As it stands, yes. there's still a slight posture that there's us and there's them. And certainly at the beginning of Music TT, and I can say this publicly, when another private and private stakeholder went to South by Southwest, funded by another ministry, Music TT decided they're going to go also. And they had yes. a hands-off attitude
I remember,
towards
I was
that.
There at that, yes, that event. And I remember asking, so how was the Trinidad team mm-hmm. received?
Yeah.
And they're like, well, we didn't go to that. So you yeah. had a whole Trinidad contingent.
Including Sparrow.
Performing. Including Sparrow. Including Sparrow.
Yes.
And mm-hmm. Trinidad James.
Yeah.
Performing. And you were supposed to be the organization to help develop this music
representing
industry.
The state.
You would not go to mm-hmm. the event, talk to the people who are there, the producers, no. the A&R people, see what it is. They get their thoughts, see mm-hmm. what it was lacking, what they like, what they didn't like, and come back with a plan.
The hands-off attitude was wrong. I do
it's
not.
It's very high-handed, and it's very self-serving.
Yeah, and that was a former government. I don't know if this government has a new policy for Music TT vis-a-vis how they interact with stakeholders.
Yeah.
But that said, as I said, our role, I'm talking as a stakeholder, as a person who promotes live events, our role is to continue making music and continue providing opportunities for musicians, working with stakeholders.
And lifting production standards and that kind of thing.
And exceeding audience expectation and creating experiences that are long-lasting. And hopefully getting people the word out that anybody could come to Trinidad and Tobago and hear Caribbean jazz, or certainly they come to Trinidad for soca.
And that's a key thing you just said, creating experiences.
Well, that's what the music industry is now. It's more yes. than, yes, great singers are good, but yes, audience expectation about is about experiences. So that is what we're doing and thing. Part and parcel of what I do, as I said, as a stakeholder, is to continue creating the live music. I wouldn't say despite the government intervention or in spite of. But the government has its role. I'm sure they'll find their own footing. After 20 years, they've been talking about expanding the music industry, including live music industry.
Well, we definitely need to follow up with Music
yeah,
TT to
we definitely
see,
have to have a conversation
get,
with
find
them.
Out what came out of this whole mm-hmm. live music pilot.
When the pilot project is over.
What needs to be changed, what they're going to keep, what they're going to throw out.
Mm-hmm. So are we talking about what's coming up in the future? What are we going to be talking about in our next episode?
Well, we have lots of new music. Again, you know, we talk about the center season. Plenty new music yeah. coming out. Now, again, because just now, you know, a lot of new soca going to start coming down the pipe.
Yeah.
So we have a lot of new music, a lot of new reggae, a lot of new...
Are we getting new pop music?
Yeah, we're getting some new pop. We're getting Afro-punk, Afro-beats coming
Afro
out.
Afro-beat, I think.
Yeah, mm-hmm. just yesterday, a new artist called me about an Afro-beat song that she has out.
I get some people keep sending me, because I do a review for a magazine.
Yeah.
And people send me music now regularly, and admittedly, some of it is well-produced, some of it is not well-produced, but I know what they're doing. They're going for a kind of tropical yeah. version of pop music. And it's there. I mean, this is the kind of thing that hopefully they've also integrated that music into the system.
Yeah. Ooh,
into the system so that it's tracked and mapped so that we can actually have proper statistics
yeah.
to say that, okay, well, 500 songs came out outside yeah. of Carnival or whatever the deal is, because that's a whole other topic.
I really want to be, I think, you know, next episode we'll look at just reggae music, the reggae industry.
Yes. Because well, I know you have family. You're familiar with Jamaica. You're always in Jamaica. Every time I talk about where Lawrence in Jamaica.
You might be reviewing some of these albums. We have a lot of new yeah. music and mm-hmm. a lot of new albums coming out. I mean, mm-hmm. Protégé dropping his new album, his first single. He just did a video for.
Yeah.
He mm-hmm. have his new album dropping, I think, this week. Mm-hmm. This at the end of June. Kabaka Pyramid just dropped a new album. Mm-hmm. And all of these are the people that came out of that whole reggae revival thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We have Taurus Riley coming out with a new album. Barris Hammond drop a new song.
Yeah. Barris,
You know, Barrington Levy drop a new song. You know, so there, things are happening on the reggae front. And then, of course, we have the countdown to Buju coming out of jail.
Yeah, well,
the website has been launched.
That is going to be huge.
I think we are seeing, I think there was a period of not silence, but there was a period where Jamaican music seemed to have been muted a little bit. And I feel like with, between Damian Marley and Chronics, there has been a resurgence happening.
Mm-hmm.
So we have
they still have the legends like Beres and Barrington.
Yeah, they still have the legends still there. I mean, Jackie and all coming out with his new album, which full of collaborations, like crazy.
Collaborations so we have seem to be yeah, we need also. To,
we're going to look at what's happening on the reggae front, and then maybe also talk about a bit about what's happening on the Trinidad and Tobago reggae front, because, you know, there was a time we had a very a burgeoning reggae scene, and then
everybody went silent.
Yeah.
Say what?
So we need to, you know, explore that a little bit.
We'll do that in our next episode of Music Matters, the Caribbean Edition. I am Nigel Campbell.
And I'm Laura Dowridge-Phillips.
Thank you for listening, and see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.